So Chris's wallet should be on the other side of the room while we record this, but probably isn't.
We did that one podcast with Gary where I literally was drunk enough that I was ordering while we were doing the podcast.
Yeah, that was you and Mike. That was a riotous night. Tonight, here on Mentioned in Dispatches, we've got Chris, whose wallet is about to take a beating. Howdy, Chris.
Hey, howdy.
And we've got our good buddy Cyrano. Jim, how you doing?
Hey, good evening, everybody.
And so this is Brant, and we're going to help our audience spend money tonight. Well, so as of this recording, the Compass Games 2019 holiday catalog has now hit everybody's mailboxes. GMT has a sale about to come up. Worthington just sent out one of their regular email blasts that has some stuff on sale. Consim Limited guys, Ray has a bunch of stuff that he was doing a deal on shipping for a bunch of things that I think was going to save Vance some money getting stuff shipped to Canada. And look, at any given point in time, Lock and Load's got something on sale, right? So between all of that, we're not talking a ton of digital stuff tonight, but we're going to help people spend some money tonight. Jim, where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say you have also missed the fact that Kevin Zucker sent out his operational studies group's sales for his fall sale for his company, which, of course, is entirely Napoleonic, so it is best. This is, and you have made this comment before, that this is such a season where those of us who are old enough to remember where you didn't get all your game information on your cell phone have a very special moment. And you come home and you're tired after work, and there on the mail pile under the sales flyers and the offer for a free duct cleaning on your house air conditioning system is the Compass Games catalog. And it's
glorious, I will say.
Well, it is absolutely glorious, and it's also so stupid. I actually thought that Kevin Zucker was the number one guy for stupid catalogs because his catalogs for his Napoleonic games are so wonderful. But Compass went and outdid it. For those who don't know, and I realize this is kind of like radio or podcast, but this thing is gigantic, but it's a single sheet of paper that then folds and folds again and folds again and folds again to be a 5x8.
Yeah, you know what they did is...
Brilliant!
On their last print run,
I'm reading the newspaper right now.
Yeah, what they did is on their last print run, when they sent a whole bunch of their maps to the printers, they just laid this out on the same size as one of their map sheets and just said, "Run these too."
You're probably not wrong.
That's genius.
Oh, it's absolute genius, and it's gorgeous. And I will tell you, So let me say this, John, Bill, all you guys over at Compass Games, don't ever stop doing this.
We would be sad.
This is one of the coolest things, and it's so silly, right? It's you know, a giant advertisement, and we think it's awesome, and we're about to spend half a podcast talking about it. I hope, you know, lots of people hear this and go spend money with them, because this thing is, it's goofy, it is gorgeous, it is so much fun to sit there and look through, and for pretty much everybody, like, you know, that's going to be listening to this, let's face it. Like, we don't have a whole lot of 20-somethings tuning into our podcast. But for those of us of a certain age, this is you know, taking us back to the Sears catalog, right? Flip to the back where the toy department was in the back of the Sears catalog. This is the TSR
catalog. The Sears catalog, the toy is?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. I didn't.
Well, okay, guys.
anyway,
let's keep it PG-13 at least.
This is remarkably... Yes, I'm old and I'm used to getting things to paper. But I get bombarded with emails all the time about sales. But when you get this printed flyer that folds out 14 times and there's something...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's you know, you pay attention to it in a way that you don't pay attention to all those emails.
Well, the physical oomph of it is kind of cool because it is a tablecloth, right? Let's face it, this thing is a tablecloth. It's huge. But you get to see it all right there on the page with you. And so you've got all the game covers. You've got all the blocks with the boxes of the different color backgrounds for the games that a lot of them have some map graphics in there. You've got counter art for a good 2/3 of the games in there. And it's all right in your face. And it is...
And then in big red letters, available now!
Yeah. Which...
Yes. Yes.
And on the first page of actual, like, you know, what would be the cover of the newspaper, there's only, like, two of them that aren't available now. Three of them. What is it? Ostkrieg's not yet, Hearts and Minds isn't yet, and Decision at Kasserine's not yet. And everything else in here, well, Nation in Arms is a reprint that says late 2019 and not yet available, but it's a reprint, so some people might have already had it. Everything else on this front page is all available now. And so we're talking Zeppelin Raider, Stalin's World War III, Late Unpleasantness, you know, Vietnam, Starkweather Vietnam.
But look, I mean, I'm going to say it. And it, even before you mentioned that you wanted to do a podcast on this topic, I felt this. Because, by the way, the GMT sale is on right now.
Yeah.
It started at Oh Christ O'Clock this morning. And
is the website even accessible?
No, it hasn't had the hard crash this year. I was able to get my one item that I wanted because I was, you know, it's like everything GMT. It's you order it, or as you've observed, Chris, you know, it's all about Kickstarter stuff, right? I ordered it 2 years ago. Oh, hey, check this out. Look at this. This is nice. It's buying a present for myself 2 years in advance. But it shows up on my doorstep, and there it is, and I go look at it, and I was able to get my stuff. But I'm going to say it, and I'm going to say it without apology. For Wargamers, Compass is past GMT, and I don't think it's close. And I just looking through this Compass catalog, this is my heart gets warm and fuzzy. Even if not every one of these games is in my particular wheelhouse. And even if, for those who want to open up their copy, just open it up just the once so that it looks roughly about an 8.5 by 11 each side, and you go check out your Paper Wars and you discover that Ty Bomba has written a game called Ragam, which I think is Vagram, but they misspelled it.
Oh, yeah, I was actually just looking at that.
Of course I ordered that. But, you know, even if you ignore things like that, it is just filled. Every single one of I don't think there was a one game in here that I wasn't at least interested to find something else about. They're not all my thing, they're not all my subject, but this is such, I mean, just again, I'm gonna open this thing. This is a little hard to do trying to stay anywhere near the microphone. But I just opened up to the first big page, and there's Adam Starkweather's Vietnam. And it's part of his operational scale system. Interested. They've got Ross Martell. Now, I do not play solo games. I just don't. But there's Ross Martell's Combat, which I am interested in, despite my not knowing about that or not caring about that stuff. And then, of course, there at the bottom was something I've been waiting for. They're doing their reprint of a game I missed and is now exorbitantly expensive, Nations in Arms, their Napoleonic grand strategy game.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, so that's gotten some really, really great reviews. They're doing some incredible games on Native American strategy. I have one of the earlier ones, and from the same designer of the earlier game, Once We Moved Like the Wind. And this is going to be the story of Geronimo, which is really, really cool to me. And then, you know, just all this stuff. And this is just one page where I'm seeing a half a dozen to 10 games, any of which, if somebody had on a table in front of me, I would definitely sit down and try to learn it with them. Oh, and in case our buddy Doug Panzer Day is out there, they're now apparently doing a No Peace Without Spain deluxe edition.
Right.
Because that's what he needs to go with his three regular editions.
Right. You know, I have Hearts and Minds. They're really high quality reboot of Hearts and Minds with the two largest and most ridiculous dice in any game everywhere. I will fight to defend that. and that's just, again, that's just on one page. GMT can't bat with these guys anymore.
Here's the thing. It's not so much, I think your bigger issue isn't, look, if GMT put out a catalog like this and just put the war games in it, it would have comparable visual oomph to it. The problem you have with GMT...
No. It is not about the look. Don't have this many quality war games anymore.
This is the issue that I would say, because Compass is cranking out games, and they're coming out with games that are covering a lot of topics that you don't normally see, which I give them huge props for that. having bought a couple of games last year when I was at Compass Con, looking at those games, their quality simply isn't at the GMT level yet. I mean, the maps are not as nice. The components are not as nice. Yeah, Compass is turning out a ton of stuff. They're turning out stuff on interesting topics that, you know, you don't normally see, and I'm excited for that. In my opinion, component-wise, they're not at the GMT level yet. Not, at least not for the games that I've personally purchased and had close-up views of. And I got to see a lot of games at the Compass convention, too. So I don't think I'm far off base in that estimation. And I, you know, I think we all know that I own a few GMTs.
You do.
But here's the big question everybody has about those GMT games.
I'm not disputing you.
No. Here's the question.
Because I love Compass. I'm going again to Compass Con. I'm going to buy more games. I take a little bit of issue to say, like, they're definitely doing things that GMT is not. I'm not sure that they've, like, supplanted GMT in the, you know, at least not for the games that I'm playing.
A couple of things there. One is, by the time this thing goes live, you will be at Compass Con or in the car on your way there, and we're going to expect a full report upon your return. But the question that everybody has is, we all want to know how it was you were able to compare the components of the Compass games to all the GMT ones, since it's well known that all of your GMT games are still in shrink.
Aha! Thank you, Dr. Mason.
Piled up in your house somewhere.
I take them out, and sometimes I actually play them. And in fact, I'm going to Compass Con to play a GMT game. Thank you.
An act of sedition.
So
I will say that Compass is very generous. They do not insist that you play their games. They do not force you. You're paying for open table space for the weekend. Now, they will offer you. There's a chance if you want to play, you know, something with Randy Heller. You know, last year I did the Bulge game.
Bitterwood?
Yeah, I was in that tournament. Randy was a very generous, you know, accessible person. He was very interested in teaching you the game. So they are offering things like that, but you're not locked into those things. A few of my friends, we have Fields to Despair. We've played individual scenarios. And this is our opportunity to sit down and play the whole campaign over the weekend. So that's what we're going to do. And, you know, Compass, as we paid our fee, they have open table space. And that's not going to stop me. I mean, like I said, I have my eye on 3 or 4 Compass games that I'm probably going to pick up at the convention.
We don't want to turn the Compass versus GMT into the Avalon Hill versus SPI of our days.
I'm trying to do that. I
started it. I'll
there's a lot of props for the way they're running their convention, because they've made it open to everyone. They're really just interested in creating a space for people to play support games that they don't normally play. They don't really care if it's their game. And they will offer opportunities to play games with, like, developers and interface that way, which is pretty cool, actually. But, they're not going to have a problem with us sitting there and playing Fields of Despair over the weekend either.
Jim, looking through the Compass catalog, if GMT created something comparable and only stacked the war games up in it, I think you'd have a lot less heartburn than you seem to over the fact that Mystery Wizard is still leading the P500 lap around the race course here.
Well, you know, it actually is an incredible joy. I have to do this now. First, and I won't dispute the quality, although I don't know which one of you said it, but it's right. I see strong Avalon Hill and SPI parallels here. I really do. I think
these are the things that us nerds are going to argue about till the cows come home.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter to the people who are casually trying to buy a game, but just go to the, you know, I'll just challenge anybody, go to the P500 list and tell me what you see. But let's check out my personal friend Mystery Wizard and observe that it still has barely made the cut to 578. So, you know, maybe that market there that they're trying to get into isn't what they thought it was going to be.
Market isn't attuned to the way the P500 system works, the way Wargamers have been for the last 20 years. Because Kickstarter's, 7 years old, 8 years old now? You know, we've been doing P500 stuff since the 90s. Like, this isn't new to the Wargamers, even though the rest of the world thinks that pre-ordering stuff and crowdsourcing it is the cool new fashion. The rest of us are sort of shrugging and going, yeah, we've been doing this since GMT opened. But I wonder how much of that is the audience that they're legitimately going for with the Mystery Wizards of the world aren't the ones that are surfing their website looking for P500 stuff. That would be my bet.
No, I think if I haven't said it, I can't believe I haven't said it, but I haven't said it. I think that it's a stupid move by GMT to try to do Junk Click Mystery Wizard. And I'm not saying the game is bad. I don't care. I won't ever know it, you know. But I think this is a mistake. I think it's not their market. I don't think it's ever going to be their market. And I think that the people who want to play Mystery Wizard are more than served. I was just listening to a couple show about Spiel, which just wrapped up in Germany. There were 1,600 games on offer for the first time there.
Yeah.
1,600 games. That's unimagined. Now, are all of them big elaborate productions? Of course not. Some of them are as big as a pack of gum. But there are some pretty amazing games out there for people who are chasing that dollar.
Yeah.
You know, there are people offering a lot of things. And I maybe this is your point, Brent. I can't imagine that somebody who is saying, gosh, I got to get my Mystery Wizard jam on. Where am I going to go? I know this place that also has PQ-17 and the Fall of Saigon, a Fire in the Lake expansion.
Yeah.
Well, I don't disagree, because, I mean, I agree with what you're saying as far as, you know, I don't see that the Euro/casual game market is underserved, because it certainly is not, in my opinion. But whatever. I mean, if GMT sees a market for that and they can do it, that's great. I mean, but
573 is not a market.
Well, that's 573 to go to press.
Four games in that P500 list that haven't even hit the 500 mark.
Right. And we say that there's no market for those things, for those topics, right?
Well, but that's 500 and something they're going to send to press. They're going to print 1,200 of them, and they're going to unload 700 of them through hobby store channels.
And of course, my eternal grievance is there's going to be war games sitting behind them or even ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know?
You're still screaming for the next CNC Napoleonics expansion.
It's done. Ready to go, and that's 3 years sitting and waiting while we try to nurse this nonsense along.
I could flip it and, you know, nitpick the number of solo games that are on Compass's schedule. Like, Devil Boats is a game that appeals to me, but not as a solo game.
Yeah.
Same thing with Bismarck. I mean, that topic appeals to me a great deal.
See, now there we're going to agree. But here I got to admit, I'm just not in... I am comfortable hating Mystery Wizard, okay, both in concept and in execution. I am very uncomfortable with the way I feel about solo games, because I do realize there's a lot of people that's the way they want to game. And I saw Bismarck just like you did, and I went, oh my God, am I buying this game? And then I see it solo, and I'm out. So I realize I'm wrong. I can't judge that. I got to cut myself out, because I can't judge that credibly because of the way I feel about solo games. I think you're right about that.
Well, you know what I call a solo game? I call that a computer game. I mean,
right. Well, I don't like playing computer games solo.
Well, you know, I mean, it's not my preference, but if I'm going to take time to open up, you know, clip counters, rules, and set up a board game, there better damn well be someone on the other side of the table for that.
Yep.
Otherwise, there's Vassal or there's computer games, in my opinion.
And that's the other thing. I'm kind of wondering, and I'm not, live your life, man, whoever you are out there, but I really do sit back and wonder, who are you people that can't find anybody to play a game with today? I mean, if you really want to sit there and sip whatever you're sipping and smoke what you're smoking and play a game solo, I guess, cool. But it's just, if I wanted to, I could fill every waking hour of every day with some kind of multiplayer gaming. I know I could, because I turned so much of it down.
Well, yeah, that's the conversation we always have with Gary, is that the reason Gary isn't in more OCS games is lack of time, not lack of game.
And I'm not trying to knock any of these things. I'm kind of comparing, like, you know, if the GMT wants to get into the casual game market, that's their decision.
Oh, yeah.
If this wants to serve the solo war game market, that's their decision.
Yeah, but see, then I will only offer, as I say, I'm out of the review, and I will only say what I would say to anyone at Compass. Yeah, but I want the multiplayer Bismarck game.
Yeah.
I want the multiplayer Devil Boats game.
Yes, but there hasn't, you know, we had a Bismarck in the great day, right? And we haven't had one since. If I'm right, I don't recall one.
Well, Jim, I will say that
Hills is the standard for the Bismarck game. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. I just, I'd love to see somebody take a swipe. Or, like, to your point, upgrade the components, you know. Sure. And that's another thing, by the way, that Compass is doing a really nice job of.
I will give them huge credit for that. I'm thrilled that they're dusting off some of these games and upgrading them and cleaning them up. You know, giving a definitive designer edition. I mean, I'm all over that.
That's dead sexy. That is dead sexy.
So, Jim, one of the things we did bring up one of these times talking about the Mystery Wizards of the world is, you know, it's really tough for a bunch of us chuckleheads sitting here on a podcast for a website that is at best an insurgent website, you know, and at worst a fairly irrelevant one. But for us to sit here and tell GMT how to run their business, right? We want them to be around for as long as possible, making the games we want to be able to play. And I get it, like, if they're around for a long time making things you don't want to play, then that's a lot less attractive. And so I totally get your point and your argument from that respect. But there's a lot of stuff that those more mass market games may be able to underwrite and enable from the GMTs of the world.
See, I no longer buy that, Brent.
You don't. Okay.
I think you're. They've made a decision. I have to. What? You're right. I'm nobody to judge them. I don't think they care anymore about it. I think they're leaving it because just look at the Compass game catalog, bottom left. I'm in my newspaper. Just you want to talk about how I'm spending some money? Already done, so I can't do it live on the air.
Interceptor Ace.
Take a look on the inner left of the whole big one. You've got Napoleon's Imperium, Napoleon's Eagles, Command and Color Tricorn, Jacobite Rising, Balkowski's Korean War, thank you very much. And, now I wouldn't do this one, but I'm surprised you didn't bring this up first, Brent. Chadwick's Third World War?
Well, Chadwick's Third World War and Bruce Maxwell's NATO, both right next to each other there.
So that's one little section. That's one little section of this giant catalog. GMT's not doing this.
Let's face it. The reason I didn't bring up Chadwick's Third World War is I don't want to end up out on a highway exit ramp begging for money to pay the $135 pre-order price because I'm just not sure how I can put together a pithy little sign that says, you know, please fund my wargame habit because I just don't have $135 laying around to pre-order this thing with. Don't get me wrong. I would love the Frank Chadwick Third World War. I've got the friggin' Battle for Germany Third World War First Edition thing sitting on my shelf right over here, and it's one of the ones that ain't rotating out of my collection. And I've played all four at separate times. I haven't played the mega game of all four together. I really enjoyed the Persian Gulf one. I thought that was a really interesting one with some neat scenarios in it. But hell yeah, I would be all over Third World War if I had a spare 130 laying around to do it.
Six maps.
Yeah, to me that's the biggest challenge in a lot of these things is that there is some fantastic components, there's some fantastic games in there, and quite frankly, the bang for your buck that you get once you do the math, how many, you know, like you did your math on Tabletop Simulator. You've sunk, what, $80-$100 in a tabletop simulator and gotten 6,000 hours worth of gaming out of it. The entertainment hour per dollar ratio is certainly fantastic for the vast majority of these things. I'm just thinking about how many hours I would have to play Third World War to get $135 worth of fun out of it. And knowing the availability of the players that I have around here, I've got space to set it up and leave it up for a year, right? As long as I don't interfere with wrapping Christmas presents because my game table gets turned into the wrapping station come middle of December, I could clear off the table and I could leave that game set up for a year up here in my office and nobody's going to molest it. And, you know, so, but the problem is I don't have somebody that's got a year to commit to playing that with me. And so, yeah, I would sink $135 into something that would be gorgeous and it would be awesome. It would come out like once a year at a convention and that's it.
You need better friends.
Well,
more loyal friends.
All right, so pack y'all's asses up. Chris, I know you're pretty mobile. And Jim, we have a city down here you can run. So,
I'm looking at Schutz Troop, you know, in the Compass. Yeah, yeah. I mean, come on, that is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at it,
Is that the Africa one?
Yes.
Yeah, and you see, but what's the price tag on that one? $52. I can live with $52.
Well, Brent, I'm going to have Third World War and that one. So.
You know why? Because you don't have a kid in high-level travel soccer who's off to college in a year and a half.
But by the way, you know, I will say on the other side, I've been saying a lot of nice things about Compass. Somebody needs to hire a copy editor. Because I don't know, you know, there's a whole bunch of typographum and syntactical stuff around here, but I'm not going to let that distract from the fact that, yeah. All right, honestly, if we were, I won't say if money were no object, because then we'd just buy all of it and try it one at a time. But by your count, Chris, since it sounds like you've gone through this, how many of these suckers would you buy if money were less of an object, do you think?
From the Compass catalog?
Yeah.
What I'm looking at right now, I mean, I could easily pick out 15 things that I would buy if money were no object.
Yeah. Brant, have you done that count yet?
I'm doing it right now, so give me just a second. And you know what, just for the sake of our podcast audience, I'm going to do it out loud, starting with the newspaper front page as it's folded in half here. So Stalin's World War III, because, look, I'm a sucker for the Cold War Goes Hot kind of stuff, but Tide does great games. Would totally be all over that one. Pacific Tide looks cool. I just, the Pacific War grand strategy ones just don't seem to grab me. Despite the previous podcasts talking about the subject, I'm sure I would find some interest in colonialism. Combat being solo, I might actually get around to playing it because, again, I don't have cool friends around here. The Fortress Europa was one of those World War II games, those old Avalon Hill big box games that I really enjoyed. And I think I would come back around to that one. CSS Fold the Gap would be an absolute. The Third World War and NATO, both absolutes. Brian Miller does cool stuff. I think Engage and Destroy would be pretty cool. But I've also seen the mock-ups of the counters from Engage and Destroy. And holy hell, you want to talk about information overload. If that's the one that I'm remembering, that's got like 16 different factors on one counter. It's insane. The CNC Tricorn, the Jacobite Rising one, absolutely looks cool. Lamps are going out. I've, you know, been wanting to get my hands on for a long time. And so I'm that might be, of all of these, that might be the one where I sort of put my money where my mouth is and go after that one. Dawn of Empire, I think I would be interested in just because it's such an unusual topic. Like, we don't tend to see much from the Spanish-American War, and certainly not anything above the tactical level, right? We've got the charge up San Juan Hill, we might have a battle in the Philippines, but we hardly ever see much bigger scale stuff from Spanish-American War. You know, going across, I'm just now for the first time looking at the other side of this page. Doomsday Project, I've been following that thing for a while on ConSim World, and so I think that would be kind of cool. Cradle of Civilization sort of plays into my 4X-ish bias. You know, so there's a handful of them there that I'd be interested in. Jim, bottom right corner of the big big unfolded version, Traders of the Air. There's your mystery wizard of the Compass Games catalog.
Yep.
And then Brief Border Wars from Brian Train. I've never played a bad Brian Train game.
Right.
Brian, that's not a challenge. Like, don't try to make a bad one. And that's just the stuff with pictures, right? That's not going through Excel spreadsheet listing of everything else in there, because I'm not going to sit here and go through all the Paper Wars issues individually. But that's just the big stuff. I mean, there's a crap ton of those things I'd be interested in.
Well, I can tell you assuming, you know, at Compass Con, if they do something similar where they have a heavily discount like they did last year, Bar Lev is a buy for me. Blue Water Navy, I'll probably cave on. I'll probably get the Starkweather Vietnam, you know, Rumor of War. Hearts in Mind looks very tempting. I mean, that's, what, four games right there that I can say that I'll be definitely considering buying when I'm at the convention.
And you haven't even turned the page.
No, I mean, this is all this stuff that I know is available, and I'm assuming they will have copies of. No Peace Without Spain, the last edition, I mean, that's going to be hard to say no to. Yeah, this is all on a single page of the catalog. Even Ostkrieg, if I saw that, I'd give a hard look to it just because I'm a sucker for East Front, World War II. Yeah, I mean, that's that one page. I could identify a half dozen games that I will. I can guarantee I'll have at least three of those by the end of the con.
Well, and depending on how deeply discounted some of those things are, I may be PayPaling you a couple of bucks to mail me something. So
don't get me banned from the con with your. I mean, I'm just seeing the decision at Castorine. I mean, come on, that's another designer signature edition. That's going to be hard to say no to.
So for the sake of comparison, I've pulled open the thread in our forum that lists a lot of the stuff GMT's got on sale.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gone to the GMT website. I'm just going from here. Jim, going back to your point, how much stuff in here is stuff that I would absolutely want to get my hooks into? There's not as much. Now, this is the difference is the Compass catalog that we've got in hand here is everything Compass has or damn near. Whereas what's in front of me for GMT right here is not everything GMT's got. It's, you know, sort of these are the things that are on sale right here. It, Fields of Fire, one or two of the Commands and Colors ones. Ardennes 44, maybe. I mean, the 4X, the 40X series are well-regarded, awesome games. You know, again, I'm not sure how often I'd get around to playing some of those things. Red Storm, Chris, you've got your copy of Red Storm now, don't you?
Yeah, I just got that.
Shrink's still on it, isn't it?
No, it's off.
Oh, okay.
I'll say, too, the other thing with GMT is, I mean, first of all, I just ordered Red Storm. I got that last week. I have the expansion, the Canadian expansion for MBT. I have that on order. And the other part for me is, I mean, it's fine to say that there's all these Compass games I want, but I own most of the GMT games I want to have. I mean,
yeah.
Well, so do I. But I'm talking about looking ahead. That's kind of my point.
Sure. And
all right, so to that end, I'm going to go pull up the GMT Games P500 page then just to go see.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been...
Stalingrad 42 is a must-buy for me. I'm going to seriously look at Tangle because I've heard great things about it, even though that's not something I would normally play. I have the MBT expansion on order.
See, one of the things that gets me about...
I'm not a huge fan of the coin games, but I have to say Fall of Saigon interests me. Just looking at their first page. I mean, this is not even... This is just their homepage.
Yeah, one of the things that gets me about the GMT P500 page is how many of the P500s are reprints or like the mounted map for something that already exists. Like there's a bunch of those things. No, I'm not interested in a mounted map for a game I don't even own. Right? So that's not something.
I will say to their credit, that has been a huge, in my opinion, that's been a huge marketing success.
Oh, hell yeah. No, I
love the mounted maps. And if it's a game I like and, you know, I am more than happy to pay an extra $20 to get a mounted map for that. So that has been genius on their part.
No. Look, I totally get all that. All I'm saying is that as a consumer, if it's a game I don't even have, then I'm a lot less interested in the mounted map.
A sick individual, and even I don't buy mounted maps for games I don't own.
Yeah. You know, sometimes we wonder about you, dude. The Ancient Civilizations, the Inner Sea, I would totally be interested in. Cataclysm, I would get just to mail the Japanese infantry to Mike. Stuff that's just the stuff that's listed under shipping now. We get down to the stuff that's I'm trying to get beyond the made the cut into the things that not there yet. So the stuff people would actually want to order. 1918, 1919, Storm in the West. That might be kind of interesting. You know, the Banish the Snakes game.
Consequence I hadn't even seen before. That's their Pacific version of Triumph and Tragedy.
Yeah.
That actually looks interesting to me. I mean, I don't even know that I bought Triumph and Tragedy.
See, we're helping people spend money. I told you we were going to help people spend money.
By helping me spend money because I didn't even know that was an option.
So Banish the Snakes, I would love to see. Like, that's one I might want to sit down and play, but I'm not sure that's one I would want to go buy. The Fab series, so Crusader Fab number 4 is in there. I've enjoyed the Fab series games. Those are pretty cool games.
Oh, this new Fab game? Oh, Lord, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Crusader. It's Fab number 4. The Sicily, the Fab Sicily game is a ton of fun. The Golan Heights one is pretty good, too.
I think I own that one, too.
Yeah, so there's the third printing of Maneuver they're coming back around to. Jim, that's the closest you're ever going to get to me playing Napoleonics, is Maneuver.
Nah, stop it.
It's a fun game. It is a fun game. But, you know, I'm going through these, and a lot of the stuff that they've got in the not here yet, you know, there's second and third printings and fourth printings of some things that I wasn't all that interested in the first time around. So, you know, I'm glad that they're on a second and third and fourth printing of certain games, but you know, again, they're not ones I was all that crazy about the first time around, and the ones that I was, like Liberty or Death, I've got, you know. So, you know, Jim, do you, you know, going back to your point, there may be more things in the existing Compass Games catalog that I would be willing to jump all over than there are in the existing GMT catalog. But that said, I think part of that is the stuff that I'm interested in playing, Compass seems to have a lot more of than GMT does. One of the areas that I'm primarily interested in is that Cold War Goes Hot kind of stuff.
I take a little issue with that. I mean, I literally have three MBT games sitting in front of me, you know.
Yeah, no, I got that. But you've got three games in one series sitting in front of you, and how many, you know, there's three or four completely different games in the Compass Games catalog that are all that same topic.
Completely different, but in principle, they're similar games.
Well, no.
And MBT isn't a new game.
Yeah, but Chris, what I'm saying is, when I'm saying completely different, they're not in a series with each other.
I take an issue with that. It's not a new game, but it's a very much enhanced version of the game.
Yeah.
No, but that game is 20 years old.
Well, Third World War from Frank Chadwick is a little more than 20 years old. And NATO, you know, Bruce Maxwell's redone NATO is a little more than 20 years old. The CSS Full the Gap one is not, but, you know, the Compass Games ones are cleanups and reprints of well-beloved older games from the 80s also. So it's not like GMT is the only one going back to the well on some of those things. It's just, Chris, like you said, you've got three different MBT games, but you've got three different MBT games. They're all in that same series. Whereas, you know, just eyeballing the Compass catalog here, you know, again, there's six, seven different Cold War Goes Hot sorts of games in here.
You can buy and not play with your friends.
Yes. Well, my non-friends. My imaginary friends.
I want to rewind a little bit. Rather than beating up on Brant's lack of friends to play games with, as amusing as it is to me, the one thing I would like to give GMT solid props on, and this I'm saying this just out of respect because it doesn't apply to me. They are doing a nice job of, instead of just standalone solo games, incorporating solo rules into their, you know, into their regular games.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Red Storm came with at least a half dozen solo scenarios, and it's not a solo game, but they've added solo rules, and they've added specific solo scenarios. So if somebody wanted to play it solo, they've accommodated that. And this has become a trend for them. Even though I don't give a rat's ass about solo play, I appreciate that they are taking into account. And they're, instead of doing strictly solo games, which that pisses me off because I see a cool game and I'm like, well, it's only solo. But GMT is trying, at least making an effort to accommodate both styles of play in a single game.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge help. And look, there's probably more than a few folks that have trouble getting four people around the table for the coin game, so having those bots built in is great. That has always been a big help. Just to stop with the Compass versus GMT fight going on there. I did flip over to the Worthington website because I know they've got, so Philadelphia 1777 is on Kickstarter as we speak right now. Actually, I think the Kickstarter campaign is wrapped, but you can still pre-order. But just looking through some of the things they've got out there, they've got a 1777 Freeman's Farm game coming up. They've got an Antietam 1862 coming up. And so I was just sort of eyeballing to see what they had floating around out there on the Worthington one. Worthington's got a lot of very nifty games with some pretty solid components. A lot of their Age of Gunpowder topics are not ones that I'm huge into, but I know that those things print money for a lot of companies. Jim, I'm going to be heartbroken if you haven't already ordered Napoleon Returns 1815.
My point on that game is, and I said this to Doug at the time, why do I want this game if I have Waterloo, or if I have Napoleon 4th Edition from Columbia?
Yeah. Well, because you're a completist.
I understand. And that's why probably after my friends get a chance to try this and play it, I doubt I'll be able to resist it on the aftermarket.
Yeah,
but I did not Kickstarter it because in many ways Napoleon 4th Edition is the perfect Waterloo campaign game for everyone. It's the game everyone should love and play.
I hear you, but let me ask. Since you bought your copy of Napoleon 4th Edition, how many other Waterloo games have you bought?
Six.
That's it?
Yep. They don't make that many. I think I've got them all. Did you say new Waterloo games or Waterloo games, period?
Well, Waterloo games that you've bought since you bought that Napoleon 4th Edition.
Jeez. Probably 14.
Yeah.
In some way related to it, because I wound up picking up a bunch of really... Yeah, no, that's right.
So
that's right. I just, you know, I try to show a little bit of self. No, Worthington falls in a very interesting place for me. I mean, Victoria Cross is still, I think, the normative treatment in a board game of those two battles. I have two. I kickstarted this one. I still don't have it. And it's, you know, it's great. I love some of their stuff. A lot of their Napoleonic stuff has seemed very, very thin to me. But their American Civil War stuff, the Hold the Line system and all that is great. It's great. I really do enjoy it. I have not tried the Pemberton and Grant or they've got that quad. I forget what the name of the titles are, but they've got that Civil War quad that plays fast. They are making a very good effort to try to strike into a kinder, gentler war game market where they're still very much historical war games, but they fall to the gentler side of the spectrum rules and depth or density wise, I think I want to say.
So they're more in line with the stuff you guys have been doing on Saturday Night Fights with your 30 Years Quad.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, they're much better looking. I mean, you know, I'm not going to fool and say that I think that those SPI games, but you know, they come up with some good games, but they're kinder and gentler than a lot of the things that you'll see, you know, and some of them are more abstract. You know, Freeman's Farm is ultimately, in my mind, an abstract game with a historical theme on it, much like the brilliant, let me be clear, W1815 of the Battle of Waterloo that later inspired in part Holland Spiel's Table Battles. But even if you look at their Antietam game, I mean, it's not a complicated piece of work. No one's going to confuse it with Gleam of Bayonets.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that's completely okay. I like that. And who knows? I may wind up picking it up. But yeah, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see and pay attention.
The four-piece blue and gray pack that you were talking about, Grant's Gamble, the Jackson and Sheridan, Lee's Invincibles, and Pemberton and Grant.
Okay, there you go.
Those are the four games. But then there's also the Band of Brothers series, because everybody needs a squad-level World War II series.
Stop it. We had this conversation.
No, not that everyone needs to own one, that every company needs to print one.
Oh, that's a rule.
Everyone is printing one at this point, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, that's like, it's a rule. No, that was one of our big conversations at the Command Central at Origins this year, is that the last 100 yards had come out. And I thought, Jesus, why do we really, really, really need yet another World War II tactical level game? To which Vance responded, well, yeah.
And so, he would know because he has them all.
I don't know. I cut my teeth on World War II tactical, but as a miniatures game.
Sure.
And, I mean, my issue with those things is they just don't interest me as board games. And I'm not knocking it. I really am not. But to me, those are meant to be miniatures games.
Well, we're certainly going to agree there. that's not even close. I applaud your answer.
I will say too, my experience, like for Napoleonics, I love Napoleonics. Mm-hmm. I'm not nearly as big a nerd as you or Doug. I'm interested in it though, and I've played a lot more Napoleonics in the past 5 years than I ever thought I would, and I enjoy it. Same thing for ACW. But I'm lucky enough to have a group that they have all that stuff in like,
yeah.
So to me, those are also miniatures games because I have the luxury of having people that have all that stuff and we play pretty regularly, you know.
Well, this certainly isn't the topic of the podcast, but it hit me hard because I do want to send a nod over, because I said it was going to, if you're into Napoleonics and board games, there is a sale going on over at Zucker's Operational Studies Group, including a pre-order for Napoleon's Wheel. He's bringing the Library of Napoleonic Battles around to the Austerlitz campaign, so that's freaking awesome.
Yeah,
you know, it's amazing. I couldn't believe that it hadn't been done, but it hadn't. And the new one that's on sale that I already have, it's Napoleon Retreats. It's the French camp, the second half of the French campaign. featuring Crayon, Laon, and Reims. So, you know, these are all great board games. But to your point, Chris, it hit me. I can play Napoleonic miniatures now with friends online. It's taking more and more to get me to take out a board game. It's like, no, I can see this stuff. And yes, no, you should own all the OSG games just for the maps. You can just, I took them with me to Europe, right? So I could get a sense of, wait, where was this? Oh, I get it now, you know? My wife took a picture of me on the Egmont battlefield with the map from The Last Success spread out on one of the historical markers, studying it, looking over Unterleichling. And so, yeah, I mean, it was great. But in terms of the spectacle and in terms of playing the games, I'm gonna take out some miniatures any day, which is a strange change. It's interesting to me. I was very surprised that happened, but happened it did.
The miniatures aspect of it, for me, what I've learned is when you're playing a miniatures game, and obviously when you're playing a miniatures game, you're not really, probably not doing that solo. You're doing it with a large, you know, with opponents. And in my case, we're doing it with large, you know, we're doing fairly large battles, usually with 4+ people on a side. What that captures is a number of things. Obviously, if you're doing it in miniatures and you have a nice table, you're capturing elements of the terrain, you know, and the difficulty of the terrain. And you're maneuvering these formations, and you have maneuver rules and restrictions, so you're capturing that element. But also, when you have different people commanding different, formations, you're capturing the personality elements, which were absolutely if you read the history behind it, the personalities were huge. And not to say it's going to play out historically, but some people just, you know, they don't do things the way that you would do things. And that's just fascinating to play that out. And those are things that I don't, you know, I think you get some of that in the board game, but it's kind of the combination of all the elements, you know. And people, what's always fascinated me, and I fall into this as much as anyone else, people get very much married to their little stands of troops. It's like you're personally invested in those.
Oh, battles, yeah.
Especially if you've painted it based
on because you've
those
been
four troops.
Let's be honest.
Created, you take that very personally.
You've probably talked to them at some point. You have probably.
I can't wait to get you onto the table. You know,
right? Or all right. Let's not be knobs. Let's not get any six. Or you know, if a one is bad, let's not have any ones rolled, shall we, gentlemen? Thank you. You know, or whatever.
That,
no.
That's the thing. I mean, that's why I really, to me, the best part, as far as short of, you know, actually joining the military and, you know, dealing with this crap, when you can have a good miniature setup and a good set of rules and people, you know, playing that out, that to me is the gold standard for gaming because you're capturing so many things in that game.
Yeah.
You're capturing the maneuver element, you're capturing, you know, the command and control pieces, you're capturing the personalities playing off of one another. I mean, I definitely do things, if I know the opponent, if that's somebody I know well, I'll definitely do things to try to get into their head.
Of course. Yeah, because if you, I can only agree and say, and I don't think I've told this story in this venue before. One of the greatest games I was ever involved in was an Austerlitz game at Historicon. Thousands of figs, gigantic battlefield. Me and a dear friend of mine, Bill Cann from Canada, that's who I met him, actually. He was right across from me. I was the French, he was the Russians. When you're playing a miniatures game like that, and it's that big, you're not doing something every minute of every moment, you know, because you got to wait for somebody else to sort their stuff out. So Bill and I are having the best time, even though our opponents were laughing, we're shooting stuff. Over in the center of the battlefield, one of Bill's fellow Russians is just losing his composure. Mm-hmm. He is screaming, he's griping, the umpires are calming him down. Finally, the umpire, it's the only time I've ever seen it, the umpire kicked him off the table. The umpire kicked him off the table, and later on, when we all got together for a beer after, I think we lost in retrospect, but I think we lost on points. We all went for a beer and a sandwich, and we were all sitting around and said, "So what was the deal with so and so?" And the French commander over in that sector was like, "I knew how much he cared about these three units because he kept talking about them. So yep. I made sure at every opportunity to shoot the living crap out of him."
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That. is something that seems right to me. And I don't know how you can't write a rule for that, and you're not going to get that in a board game. You're just not.
Yeah.
So no, it's, you know, I mean, if these things tend to get fully fleshed out in miniatures games. Just there's a combination of things that happen. I mean, no one's going to be that emotionally invested in a cardboard counter. They're just not. But if it's something that you based and you painted and you couldn't wait to get onto the table, yeah, when it gets shot to shit, there's a good chance you're going to freak out about that.
Well,
or at least you're going to be demoralized about it, you know?
Okay, so there are some cardboard counters out there that somebody might get attached to, particularly if it's their face on them, because David over at Lock and Load has put some people on some counters. You like that?
Shoot the shit out of the Mirth Count.
Yeah, you like that transition there? Hey, so we talked a bunch about Worthington and Compass and GMT. I do want to. I pulled up the Lock and Load website just because I wanted to see what was on sale over there, and they do actually have a bunch of stuff on sale right now. It's not a lot of their series games. Some of them, Wing and a Prayer is on sale right now. The Tank on Tank series is on sale. Rommel at Gazala is on sale right now. So Werbenet's game.
Gazala is a great game, by the way. I want to plug that because I played it, and with the most recent version, they did a very nice job with it. I also liked it because I kicked my buddy's ass. For what it is, it's a very nice game.
If you drag your ass to Origins next year, you can get the designer to sign your copy.
Yeah. I wanted to plug, apparently if you go to CompassCon this year, you can play NATO with Bruce Maxwell, too.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was tempted to ditch Fields of Despair for that, by the way.
The Nations at War series is on sale over there right now. Some of them are out of stock. Trial of Strength is on pre-order, going on about the fourth straight year of that one being on pre-order. Toten Sontag is on sale. Heroes,
also a great game. I had that sitting right on top of my pile, actually.
Heroes Against the Red Star. So there's a handful of the modern Lock and Load Tactical. Baron the Jackal, Day of Villainy. So there's some of those. Dawn's Early Light is half off, the Red Hammer reprint.
The new version is, I don't even know that I have that. I definitely
want. So what the new version did was it incorporated some of the stuff from the Line of Fire magazine. Some of those expansion rules and scenarios that were in the Line of Fire magazines. They incorporated them into the Dawn's Early Light Red Hammer release. So those are out there now. And on sale. There's a whole bunch of the Lock and Load Tactical stuff that's on sale. Day of Heroes, Heroes of Nam, Heroes of Normandy, Bastogne's Outpost, Heroes of Falklands, Heroes of the Motherland, Dark July. Those are all, you know, anywhere. It looks like they're all 40% off right now. So you can get a pretty good deal on a whole bunch of the larger boxed Lock and Load Tactical stuff. And Lock and Load, you know, ASL is ASL. It's World War II. You just deal with it. But Lock and Load Tactical, that same basic set of rules gets you from World War II all the way up through Mogadishu. And then if you're grabbing Baron the Jackal or Days of Villainy, I mean, Days of Villainy was, that's the Libyan Civil War. So that gets you all the way up to, you know, 3 years ago in one rule set. So depending on what you're after there, there's a whole lot of game to be had for the Lock and Load Tactical stuff. And it's all showing it.
Give more love to Lock and Load. They actually do some cool stuff.
Well, and all showing it 40% off right now. So
yeah, everything is on sale because I'm telling you. And if you play tactical, which I do, it is for what it's worth. I don't play a lot of tactical games. I certainly don't play a lot of modern games. But if I do, it is Lock and Load, and it's it's almost entirely because of the X maps.
Yep. Exactly.
Just because they are so freaking gorgeous. I remember when David Heath showed it to us at Central Command at Origins, and I went, okay, where are these? And, you know, and I got them for the Heroes of the Nam, which is still, to me, the normative treatment at the tactical level. I like the other offerings that are out there in that space, but my preference is definitely for Heroes of the Nam, especially with the X-Maps. And I love Day of Heroes. I've probably played that more than any other modern, and I include in that World War II tactical board game, even more than Squad Leader back in the day and all that stuff, just because I love those missions, and now I love the maps, and I was a playtester with Doug on the solo module stuff, so I played a bunch of it through that, and it's a testament to that game that I playtested a module for it and didn't wind up hating it when I was done. I wanted to play it more.
Well, and one of the interesting things about Day of Heroes compared to a whole lot of other modern games is that you may well know somebody. I mean, I do know a couple of people that were in that battle. That may well be one where you actually know somebody that was on the board that you're busy playing the game of. Although I say that, and it's a lot harder to necessarily say that today, given that we're 25 years past it at this point.
You need to shut up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Sorry. I mean, not terribly, but at least a little.
I want to go back to giving props to Phil Sontag and Don's Early Light, because that whole Core Command system, I mean...
Oh, it's genius.
Those are very well-done games, and they're not complex, but they offer some nuance. They're very accessible. They're very well-done. The production values are great. So I think those are underrated games for what they are. I mean, I own them, I play them, I actually love them. And it's something you can throw down in play, you know, in a few hours to completion.
Yeah, I really wish Pete was still designing more stuff, because there's a half a dozen other Core Command games I would love to see.
I agree.
Just because you're right, they're fantastic games. I mean, there's no two ways around it. They are some of the most fun, and you know, one of the things it's a euphemism we use a lot when we're talking about wargaming, but it's one that absolutely applies to those, is that they feel right.
That's exactly it, and you just nailed it, because I'll play the groggiest friggin' shit that you can put in front of me, but those are both very small. They're small games. There's few counters. The counter information is, there's not a ton of it, but they feel right. They do exactly what they should do for those games. I mean, they do what they're designed to do, and they do it very well.
And there's not a lot of opacity to it. You can see exactly where and how and why things happen in that game. And that's part of what helps make it feel right.
None of it makes you feel like, oh, that's not right. It shouldn't work that way. There's opacity, and it also works the way, it makes sense the way that it works.
Yep, exactly. No, absolutely. Listen, we're kind of hitting time. We got a little bit of a hard stop tonight, only because we got people that have other commitments this evening, so we're at a bit of a hard stop here.
Oh, boy.
Plus
there
the...
I'll leave my son at rehearsal. That'll be a good move.
I need to get back to watching the World Series game and see if the Astros can come back, because as of this very moment on the recording, the Nationals just hit another home run to take a 3-2 lead. So I've got some World Series to go watch and go cheer for my boys from Houston. So this has certainly been an interesting podcast. I really hope we've served as the junkie enabler for our fellow wargamers out there, and that we've helped people spend some money tonight, and that we've shown an appropriate amount of love where it was well-deserved from several different companies. Lock and Load's got a ton of cool crap on sale. Go take a look. That Compass Games catalog, if you don't have it, get on their mailing list, because it is...
If you don't have that catalog, definitely get on that mailing
list. It is.
Your Christmas is less if you don't have it.
Yeah, it is ooh-ah awesome.
In and of itself is a Christmas present.
I they sit right next to each other, my OSG catalog and my Compass catalog. They make me happy.
I think.
And then I put little pen marks next to, like, question mark or circle. And then, to be honest, because my wife and my mother-in-law and my beloved family that does care about me says, what do you want? I hand them this document.
I was about to say, and then you leave it laying around for the family to find.
Oh, no, I ain't no laying around. Look, you asked the question, here it is. Any of these will be just fine. Surprise me.
This is my buyer's guide for going to Compass Con. I basically like would be like, I'll take one of those, and this year, I'll take that.
and I guess I would say, just looking at all of it, GMT included, guys, and I don't care how old you are, whether you're up here in the years like me or if you're a new gamer, this I love SPI. I love Avalon Hill. I love Victory Games. I love the classical era. It's great. It's not as bad as people have said it is. But holy cow, are we in a really cool time for gaming.
Yeah.
We absolutely are. And that cannot be stressed enough.
Well, I think what it is, we're in a very well-decorated time for gaming.
There's some great games being put out right now.
Well, yeah, really, but there were some great games being put out 35 years ago. They just look like shit.
No, but the other thing is, they fell into narrower ranges. We've now got a repository of 30 years of awesome games that I defend passionately and shouldn't be criticized the way they are. But that's 30 years of work. We're getting this in a year or two.
No. That's a fair point.
I'm fully on board with. I mean, whatever's happened at Compass, where they're doing like things that have never been done. They're covering periods, and they're just putting out a ton of games. I'm completely for that. I mean, I think it's fantastic the amount of stuff that Compass is putting out. And they're covering stuff that people aren't covering, and that's only going to benefit us all in the end.
And let me say, just in case I'm misunderstood on this whole thing with GMT, I think the cover of Nevsky is the most ridiculous crap I've ever seen for a game of this quality. But of course I bought that game. Guys, we've got a game about Alexander Nevsky produced at this level by one of the great designers of our time. And it's produced, as Chris has been saying, at an absurdly high quality. You know, I mean...
You also tie into something, and I don't want to just keep rolling on this, but I mean, I buy games that I don't. It may be from a time period that I'm not even interested in, but some of these designers I buy just like, oh, he came out with a new game.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's pretty much Volkerunke and Cole Worley. You know, Volkerunke crossed with me because he made Mystery Wizard, right? Because I would have followed him to the gates of hell and back on a historical topic. I don't care what it's about. You know, it's about this arcane battle from the middle of Central or South America in the 12th century. Okay. What can you tell me about that? Same thing with Cole Worley. You know, his Pax Pamir and his John Company are not traditional war games, but I'll go straight to the gates of hell for those guys. So no,
same thing with Compass. If I see Starkweather, I'm probably going to buy it. I mean, just because
have no self control.
No,
yeah,
well,
no,
why should
that's the whole thing.
You know what? And why should
actually Matt Randy Heller. He was a very cool guy. I mean, that's the nice thing too with like these conventions. Like when you put some of these designers in front of you, you just get to chat with them like normal people, and you find out they're gamers just like you are.
Well, along the lines of those normal people, one of our normal people has to go pick up one of his normal people. So
yes, I do.
I think we got to call this one a night, and I hope the audience had a good time with this one. I know we had a good time with this one. We do every year when the Compass catalog hits, and it triggers us talking about all sorts of other companies and games as well. Audience, thank you very much. Come back and talk to us again in a couple weeks when Chris comes back and tells us all the loot he brought back from Compass Con with him. Jim, thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
Chris, thank you for being here. Audience, thank you for being here, and we will talk with you next time.